Yo, hey, we are back with another episode of Dialogue Heavy, and yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. Good morning, good evening, good night, wherever you are. Thank you for listening to your boy. As you know, we got to be intentional and deliberate with our goals. So I will tell you this, the goal of this podcast, the Dialogue Heavy podcast, is to share my stories with friends, family, fans, and also get in contact with those willing to help me share these stories with the world. Speaking of stories, I got a new one for you. It is called Never Have I Ever. You know what it is? The game from back in the day when you were kids, possibly in your 20s, where you raise your hand after somebody says, never have I ever, you know, slept with five people, or never have I ever jumped off a mountain, or whatever. Usually more strange and kinky stuff, but, you know, that's the whole point. And so I say this because most people, if not all people, have secrets that I call to the grave secrets that you will never tell. You haven't told your spouse, boyfriend, girlfriend, significant other, your kids, your parents, nobody. And there is absolutely nobody on this planet besides you and God, or your God, who knows this. So this young lady in the story, a homemaker named Maya Pointer, may have one of these. But she can't even figure it out herself. We sometimes hide these things so far back in our place that you don't even know if it's true or not. You know it's true, but you don't even want to believe it's true. And we're gonna see if Maya has one of those. So I'm just gonna bring it to you. I'll give you the first half this week. I'm still writing the second half. I think I know where it wants to go, but I'm gonna have to flesh it out. This one might be a shorter episode, but I think it'll be interesting nonetheless. A lot of description, but I gotta paint the story for you guys, and then we'll just keep on keeping on. So without further ado, I bring to you Never Have I Ever. And as we all know, everything on this podcast thus far has been written and recited by Michael Anthony McMillan. So here we go. Mrs. Maya Pointer sat on her couch alone, trying to think why she felt like such a fucking loser. She had done everything right, been a model wife and mother, and worked hard as a homemaker to ensure her husband and three young monsters needed for nothing. Now, she described her feelings to her therapist and friends, and they settled for the classic midlife crisis excuse. But deep down, she knew something else had to be wrong. It started weeks ago, after a sudden decline in sugar prescribed by her doctor, and after being forced to trash all her delectable treasures, soon the terrors started. She spent all week exercising the demons, cooking and cleaning, while the Pointer men had a reprieve in Los Angeles at the Los Angeles Rams football camp. But they were due to return first thing in the morning, and Maya had 12 hours to figure the puzzle out, because Gene was starting to notice. Yeah, he was starting to ask questions, and in his line of work, it was only a matter of time before he found out. On the weekends, Gene was a weekend bro, fully equipped with cut-off tees and backwards hats, fanboying over every American sport known to man. And whether it was an obscure cheese or a one-of-a-kind pale ale, Maya was in charge of having every one of his fantasies prepared and set out on the game time table by the start of the first college game on Saturday into the last NFL game on Sunday. But it was worth it. No woman minds applying a bit more elbow grease when their man works as hard as Gene does. His career path was a serious one, as an officer in the United States Army Intelligence Department. He specialized in interrogation tactics, where he invented new ways to extract information from the captured war criminals looking to invade and destroy the way of life most Americans took for granted. And Maya was proud of him, even if he could never share the details behind his mad science experiments. Personality-wise, Gene was near perfect. Soft-hearted when Maya or the boys needed him to be, but he could also put his foot down when either one of them tried to take advantage of him. His only problem was that he was so damn paranoid. I mean, maybe it was his job, maybe it was the general stress of being a sole provider for three human beings, him included, but whatever it was, Maya often had to draw the line when it came to their domicile. The family lived together in a 3,000 square foot gated palace on a hill overlooking the rest of a overlooking the rest of a secure military base with around-the-clock trained killers at the foot, so Maya didn't understand why their home needed the uber-expensive, complex surveillance system that Gene just had to have. But he wouldn't budge. Okay, so Maya took the loss up there, but she put a stop to it when it came to their bedroom. I mean, what woman could walk around naked, or worse, make love to her husband knowing there was an eye in the sky watching it all? Gene initially disagreed, of course, but after a tough 3-week span without sex and Maya walking around the home more covered up than a nun, Gene finally broke. And that was that. That was their life. Routine after routine, schedule after schedule, the setting of goals and the crushing of them. So why did Maya feel like an imposter? All three of their boys were growing into responsible young men. Her and Gene's couples therapy ensured that they communicated and had sex multiple times a week, and money was far from an issue. So what was wrong? Why did Maya kiss Gene every morning when he left for work, but feel a dark pit in her stomach when she uttered the words, "I love you too"? It was starting to become overwhelming. She could be reading a picture book with her youngest son, turn the page, and the only word on it in big bold letters read, "Fraud." The week prior, she went to lunch with a friend and politely listened as she rambled on about nothingness and suddenly snapped out of her daydream when she thought she heard her utter the word "scam artist." And when she asked her to repeat what she said, her friend said nothing of the sort. I mean, she knew she wasn't delusional, and she knew she wasn't crazy, at least in comparisons to most. Plus, she just had a full-blown physical last month in which the doc told her to lay off the sugar a bit, but that was it. So what the hell? The surveillance camera screens amongst the computer in Gene's private office watched and recorded as Maya patrolled the house for any last grease spots or smudged windows she might have missed. On the first screen in the garage sat a jet-black Cadillac Escalade, and next to it, Maya's cherry red-colored Beamer. Along the walls, organized in place, were Gene's tool set and crafting table, and below them, multiple gray storage containers labeled by season and in alphabetical order. On the next screen, the backyard had a large beige-topped summer canopy with a long glass table under it and 6 matching chairs to the top left corner. A big plush lawn where the boys and Gene played countless games of football, two-on-two football, and a cobblestone pathway down the middle leading to the black marble bottom infinity pool. The next screen was dark, but recording nonetheless. And there, Maya was, on the last screen, standing under the gazebo in front of the patio door, staring out into the night sky littered with stars and a huge crescent moon. She gulped the last of a Pinot Grigio glass and couldn't help but to notice a rat with its long tail scurry across the back wall made of cinder blocks to enter a tree. And something inside of her teased that the two were related, but she laughed and shook her head at the thought. She walked inside, where the alarm beeped after the door was locked, then paced through the living room with imported gray suede couches to the sanctuary that had enough equipment to win her the Iron Chef Championship. The floors made of yet more black marble with white streaks matching the countertops, Japanese cutlery of all varieties magnetically attached to the wall over the sink, a food processor, juicer, and air fryer for quick meals on the go, a dual oven that could cook 2 items at separate temperatures, and an island for prep with a hanging rack above providing every type of pan one could need. Maya opened their Sub-Zero refrigerator after looking at a picture of Gene and the boys on a camping trip to Yellowstone and thought to herself, all is well, right? They were happy, she was happy, relatively, and they all were healthy, God bless. Maya came to the conclusion that she would just have to relax. Now, she wasn't particularly hungry, but that didn't mean she wasn't going to eat. She was going to need something to calm her nerves until she slipped into a rare, uninterrupted coma. And with her husband's touch being of absence, there was only one other thing she could think of. Way in the back of the freezer, behind all the Tupperware and dated labeled frozen meats, was a container of double chocolate ice cream that her husband told her not to touch. He didn't explain much, but she was used to that. And it was easy at first, because this was before the doc ordered her to stop eating sweets. But now that all her snacks, including the emergency stash her middle son found hidden behind the washer, was gone, she was tapped. And she had been stealing a sliver of this mound of joy every couple of days, spoonful by spoonful, for weeks. And as Maya pulled out the container, a thought crossed her mind. Maybe that was where her guilt stemmed from. She had disobeyed a direct order from her husband, something rare, and if ever done, since their wedding day. Then after just a second, she laughed out loud. It's fucking ice cream! She grabbed the spoon, shut out the downstairs lights, and ascended to the only place in her house where she felt a true sense of privacy. Maya turned on the light of the dark room, closed the double doors behind her, and entered into their grand master oasis. The California king bed with a royal blue wall-mounted headboard served as the centerpiece and most important area of the establishment. The 500 thread count linens of coral and green looked to give her a pleasant night's sleep after her gorging session, and she could barely wait. She placed her chocolate delight on the side table, then walked over to the walk-in closet to disrobe. Inside, everything was color-coordinated and put in order by length. It was summer, so mini skirts were next to skirts, then dresses, and halters hung next to spaghetti straps, then v-necks. No t-shirts of dumb coffee cliches for this lady. Maya thought it was unladylike. She unloaded the gold necklace and diamond-encrusted earrings in their rightful place inside her jewelry dresser, and after a shower and shave of some very important places, she slipped on a silk golden nightie that would be appetizing to Jean in case they came home before the sun poked over the distant mountains. By the time Maya slipped into bed and felt the coolness of her sheets, the ice cream was perfectly soft. At impact, it was heavenly, coating the inside of her mouth and slowly sliding down her throat. And she thought for a second that this feeling might even be better than the kinkiest of things Jean and her tried over the years. That feeling of guilt and sadness was further than gone, and all she felt was ecstasy multiplied. "Oh my God," she said out loud with a mouthful of chocolate. All the little nibbles she had throughout the weeks prior could not compare. An electric shock hit her senses and cold massaged the warmth of her insides, and soon it felt orgasmic. She ate at a famine speed, spoonful after spoonful, barely coming up to breathe. And when her fire alarm beeped, she looked up and resembled a vampire over a corpse as the melted chocolate ran down her chin, dropping onto the nightie and comforter. But soon, the sadness returned. Not from disobeying her husband, and not from the sudden crash after mass amounts of sugar. No, Maya only felt sad because the container was close to empty. All that was left was the murder scene of chocolate streaks left by her weapon gouging at the chocolate mountain that was now gone. The inner addict in her spoke to return downstairs and pirate the freezer for any lost treasure she might have missed, but she knew her kitchen better than the back of her hand, and playtime, for now at least, was over. She looked at her reflection in the full-length mirror across the room and saw a glutton with her legs open and her back slumped over. She looked like an ogre, a chocolate-covered ogre. And then she thought to herself, so what? You know what? It was Gene's fault anyway. He knew better. In fact, he probably just as well assumed she would eat his precious ice cream. I mean, you wouldn't leave an alcoholic in a bar to their own defenses, would you? You know what? She wouldn't deny it. She would own it. And even tell him before he asked. Maybe right after sex. He was never angry right after sex. And in case he was, she would just simply go to the store and buy all the ingredients he needed to make more. There. That's it. And after that, Maya was satisfied with her dissension. She grabbed the remote from Jean's side of the bed and turned on the television that was mounted on the wall across the room, but stopped when she noticed the portrait above it of her and Jean on their wedding day. She was noticeably younger then, thinner, tighter skinned, and without a gray hair to be plucked. a simple bride in a simple white dress, and Jean was her too handsome husband in his military dress uniform. Two young kids in love and actually crazy enough to wait for Maris to make love for the first time in their lives, but it was worth it. They had everything they ever needed, and it worked. Maya smiled after that thought. She put the container on the table and was about to turn off the light when she saw the lid. Do not touch. And under it in the initials, U.T. What the hell was that supposed to mean, she thought. No matter. Maya turned off the lamp and fell asleep that night in pure bliss and a chocolate-filled belly. But when she woke, it would be pure hell. And boom! So that's it, guys. That's it for this week, anyway, on this story of Never Have I Ever. Are you still wondering what's going to happen? Because I am, and I still have to write it. So it's going to be good, though. Like I said, I feel like I know where it's going to go. But I wanted to bring you guys a story or part of a story every week, so I worked my tail off to get it there, and I still have some things to kind of flesh out and look at, but we almost there. So with that, it's a quick one today, and that'll be it. So that's it, that's all, and I hope you liked it, I hope you loved it, and if not, I hope you listened and learned something from it. So that's it, I will talk to you guys next week. Dialogue Heavy, your boy is out. Peace! I'm out of here!